Welcome to the show. I'm James.
I'm Riley.
And I'm Bell.
And today we are discussing the Coen Brothers movie, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Oh, jeez.
Finally.
We'll laugh. We'll argue. You might get a little too into it, but at the end of the day, they're just movies.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, thank you.
You hear the za on the end of that?
Movies.
That was like a Metallica kind of movie za, yeah.
We're going to get some za after this.
Spoiler alert. Here's a segment. We're the show that got a recent 5-star review that I will now read verbatim. This comes from Ishmael CM. They said, great podcast. I'd write more, but I fear that the unwashed and very young may misconstrue or disregard any nuance presented. And that is one responsibility I will not cast aside.
Thank you. That's very responsible of you to say that.
Fans of the show will understand.
Yes, that's a reference to
last two
events.
Episodes, really.
Were you guys unwashed? I'm very confused.
No, we're washed. But those poor, poor unwashed, they need a shower. They need some help.
Let's move on. Bell, what are you giving this movie out of 10? You picked this movie.
I did. Thank goodness we chose it. I'm very excited. Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Is jam-packed with action, comedy, great music, and a lovable quirk that sometimes toes the line of fever dream and instant classic, but it manages to stick the landing and become a movie that'll stick with you for years to come. 9.2 out of 10.
Hard to disagree, Riley.
9.2
out of 10.
Okay, well, I'm glad I wrote this.
Out of 18.
Maybe it's not for everyone, but this movie and its soundtrack pushes me onto the sunny side of life every time. I'm giving it an 8.5. This is one of my formative movies. My family used to listen to this soundtrack on repeat on road trips.
Constant soundtrack at the Murdoch house.
Me and my three brothers all sing in harmony.
Oh, that'd be lovely.
It was the Murdoch family choir. James?
Delightful. How have I never seen this? Oh, it's because no one ever watched it who was compelled to recommend it. 6.9 out of 10.
You never watched it?
No, I never saw it.
Dang.
Whoa.
I've seen at least three other movies from these directors, and I enjoy them more than this one.
I mean, the Coen brothers, yeah.
They're hit or miss. This is like Bucks. This is Baxter Scruggs. Is that what the show
Buster
is called?
Scruggs,
Buster
yeah.
Scruggs
I
territory.
I didn't watch that one. But that one was a, like a,
anthology.
What do you call it? Yeah.
Musical.
Bunch of different stories.
I think that this movie was like, it's goofy and quirky and fun, but there's not enough, it's not funny enough or emotional enough or anything enough for me to be like, I need to see this again in my life. And I think everyone felt like that, and that's why no one ever was like, you need to see it. Although I love Man of Constant Sorrow.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, great song.
I'm not going to do it. But I would argue lots of things after we do our sponsors.
I'm sure you will. Hey, Vessi, thanks a lot for sponsoring today's video. I just want to shout you out.
Love
you
Vessi.
So much. Your shoes. These are all going to be directed to the second person. Vessi, your shoes are known for being waterproof. They're lightweight, they're easy to pack, and they're breathable. I don't need to worry about the weather anymore thanks to you and your dual climate knit material that keeps my feet warm during winter and cool during the summer. This should just
these are the wedding speeches for the brands.
Yeah.
The next one's a haiku. Super easy to slip on and take off, comfortable for traveling, fit almost any occasion and suitcase. Riley's probably wearing them right now. And you know what else I like about your shoes, Vessi? They're 100% vegan. And what's that? You're offering me $25 off
what?
Using the code TJM at checkout? Scandalous. Check them out at Vessi.com/TJM and use code TJM.
You taught me that shoes could be vegan.
Thanks to Secret Lab. Thank you, Secret Lab, for sponsoring this video. Secret Lab, your chairs, you know, they're just designed to keep me comfortable for long nights of work and play. And your Titan Evo 2022 series chair offers four-way lumbar support, comes with a magnetic memory foam head pillow, and is offered in different upholsteries like hybrid leatherette, soft weave fabric, and Napa leather, the official leather of roll-down top desks floating in deluges. Best of all, your five-year extended warranty is included along with a 49-day return policy, so I'm covered if anything goes wrong. If I wanted to learn more about you, Secret Lab, I'd go to lmg.com/secretlabtjm. You're so good to me.
I feel compelled to not keep it a secret.
Thanks to Manscaped for sponsoring today's video. Manscaped, what a guy. Your Lawnmower 4.0 is designed to keep my family jewels safe with your ceramic blades featuring skin-safe tech to reduce nicks and cuts. There's a reason people don't do this. This sounds so bad. Leave the cables at home with its new wireless charging system that is compatible with most Qi charging pads. It's cordless, it's waterproof, it gets 90 minutes on a full charge, and a partridge in a pear tree, okay? Head to manscaped.com/TJM20 and get 20% off and free shipping today.
And a partridge in a pear tree, okay?
I got that from Home Alone.
That's amazing. And what's even more amazing is all the stuff that happens in this movie.
Oh, what an adventure.
Mm-hmm.
It is. It sure is a quest, an odyssey, you might say. In 1937, Mississippi, three convicts, Pete Delmar and Ulysses Everett McGill, escape from a prison chain gang. A prison chain gang. Watch out, they're in town. To retrieve a treasure Everett claims is buried in a valley scheduled for flooding. They get a lift from an old blind handcar driver who prophesies about their journey, claiming they will find a fortune, but not the one they seek. And this odyssey starts out proper.
A lot of blind guys in this movie.
Oh, yeah. And they're mysterious, too.
Go for it.
After being betrayed by Pete's cousin, nearly getting caught by the ruthless Sheriff Cooley, and being baptized in a river, except Everett, the men pick up Tommy Johnson, a young black man who claims he sold his soul to the devil in exchange for sick guitar skills. Together, they record a song as the Soggy Bottom Boys before parting ways to avoid the police. Unbeknownst to them, the recording becomes a major hit. Following a wild encounter with bank robber George Babyface Nelson, the men are seduced by three singing women, but Delmar and Everett awake to find Pete apparently turned into a toad, who is later squished by the one-eyed con artist Big Dan, who mugs them. The two survivors reach Everett's hometown, where his wife Penny has told his seven daughters that he's dead. Everett loses a fight with Penny's new suitor, Vernon. Delmar and Everett then discover that Pete is alive, having been turned in by the women, not transmogrified. They break him out and he confesses to giving away the treasure's location. Everett then confesses the treasure was a story he made up to convince Pete and Delmar to help him escape and stop his wife from getting remarried. Pete's outrage is interrupted when they stumble upon a KKK rally where Tommy is about to be hanged, led by gubernatorial candidate Homer Stokes. The men manage to kill Big Dan, who is also there, with a burning cross, and escape with Tommy. Determined to get his wife back, Everett convinces the others to sneak into a Stokes campaign dinner she is attending, disguised as musicians. Performing their radio hit causes the crowd to go wild, despite the protestations of Stokes. Protestations? Protestations?
Yeah, more T than D.
Governor Pappy O'Daniel seizes the opportunity and grants the boys full pardons, while Penny agrees to remarry Everett if he retrieves her original ring from the cabin in the valley, which Everett had earlier claimed was the location of the treasure. There, Sheriff Cooley is waiting and orders them hanged despite the pardons. As Everett prays to God in desperation, the valley is flooded and they are saved. Back in town, Everett presents the ring to Penny, who identifies it as her aunt's ring, and declares she'll only marry him with her wedding ring, which is now at the bottom of a lake. They pass by the blind man, who cranks his handcar off towards the horizon.
Prophesizing.
Oh, damn. That's a different song. I always just like jump into whatever.
Imagine if you raised teenagers for whom this was their favorite movie.
Oh, man.
I'd be like, wow, I made it. What wholesome kids I got
we
here.
We loved it. We are wholesome. I'm pretty wholesome.
You know, the like drama kids? They just love AP English and
the album was straight up on repeat. Like I just love all these songs. Some of them are kind of slow.
You know, you're not the only one. It won a Grammy.
Did you watch this a lot as a young man?
A lot? No.
You've seen this multiple times?
Yes. Like probably five or six. I do very much enjoy it. And part of it goes to, I think of I'm a Man of Constant Sorrow, and then I just watch the movie. Because it's like, man, that song is just so good.
Of Constant Sorrow.
When you're watching it, you're like, that sounds great. B, there's no way that's George Clooney because Roman numeral one, it doesn't really look like it's coming out of his mouth. Roman numeral two, because we're going through A, B, and C already. This is a sub menu.
Thank you.
Roman numeral two is, if you tell me that George Clooney is that good looking and that good at acting and can sing like that, I'll just kill myself now.
No, he can't sing. He apparently tried and trained to sing the songs.
Oh,
and
really?
No.
Wow.
Because his aunt is a famous singer. So they're like, oh, you can sing.
Give him a shot.
He cannot.
I saw
not to the degree that he would be a country music phenom in a land that only has radio.
Amen. That's right.
I saw a meme recently comparing him to Cary Grant. I think it was Cary Grant. As like attractive Hollywood actor who's willing to make himself look dumb for humor. And that's George Clooney.
Is it?
Well, he looks like, I feel like a lot of his comedy just comes from just him doing like silly faces and stuff. He's not like super, super funny himself. He's just kind of like, what do you call it? Sardonic? Wry?
That's a good word.
There's
regardless.
One of the most cringe kind of like goofball scenes is earlier in this movie, which is when they're in the barn. And the cops are outside and they're surrounded. That's the part where it really changes the tone. So you're like, oh, okay, this is the level of silliness we're doing.
Yeah.
And in that scene, I think that he gets He starts acting like you're talking about. He gets really silly and, oh, we're
Sam Hill?
We're in a spot.
Damn, we're in a tight spot.
He says it a million
four times. Four times. And the best part is that the first three times are the camera's on him, and the fourth time, you just hear him in the background as, like, they're realizing that the fire is spreading or something, and you're just like, what? And you just hear him in the background, damn, we're in a tight spot. Like, four times.
When they're leaving the barn, he's, like, trying to... Like, it's a conflagration. He's hitting the walls that are just engulfed in flames with a blanket or something completely ineffectual. That's when I was like, okay, that's some slapstick. Like, this is slapstick at this point.
Oh, yeah, it's great. I mean, like, there's so much physical comedy in this movie. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know, the unexpected... like, you see Big Dan, like, tearing the branches off the tree as they're, like, having this casual conversation, then suddenly he just, like, smacks him.
Yeah, and he's, like, still talking to him. He's like, ah, yeah, what are you doing? Oh, yeah, that's crazy. Yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
What's the deal? What's the deal, Dan? Big Dan? Yeah.
Yeah, this movie comes at you fast.
It does.
Because, like, in the first 15 minutes, you go through so much. Like, the escape, there's the train where they get yanked off the train because Pete falls.
Mm-hmm.
They record the song. They get the congregation, like... This movie
that's
has
in
such 15 a high,
minutes?
Yeah, that's a high-speed movie.
Really?
And it feels like it keeps this up for a lot of the movie. Like, I feel like the rate of which events are happening is just, like, blasting you.
Yeah.
But I don't mind it because of the silliness and lightness, because, like, they don't care. They're like, oh, that was crazy.
Yeah, yeah. There's so many events, and some of the scenes are like, how is this tied in at all? But this movie does one of those, like, big world, small window things, mm-hmm. where, like, you're following this group of guys... And then suddenly we're having these scenes with, like, the mayoral race or the governor race, it is.
Yeah.
And you're like, who cares? But that's almost right. like its own movie happening off screen that they play this small role in. Like, there could be a movie that's just about this guy trying to retain his governorship.
Right. Mm. I really appreciated that as sort of like the background plot that's playing out while the main adventure is happening. And then it kind of all gets tied together at the end.
It
was neat.
Yeah, because you go like, oh, this Poppy guy is a bad man. He's so mean, whatever. Oh, this other guy,
he looks like the Big Lebowski.
Yeah, this other guy's so fun and light. And then it's like, oh, that other guy is actually yeah. a racist and like the Grand Klansman or whatever they call it. And this other guy's not actually that bad, I guess.
I think he's actually called, okay, I'm not sure. But there is a rank in the KKK that I saw pointed out that is called Grand Cyclops.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
is why... But then Big Dan is there, but he is
well,
not.
Well, we haven't
the,
explained
Homer
the whole Homer thing.
Yeah. So we should probably say
Let's
that.
Let's do it now. The opening crawl, it shows, it says, they say at the opening of this movie that this is based on The Odyssey by Homer.
Well, do they even say that? It says, oh, Muse, relay the story or whatever. I think it has the quote from The Odyssey. It doesn't say this is The Odyssey, but it. It has the same like appeal to the muse, which happens in a lot of Greek stuff going on. But and
those are the first lines of the Odyssey.
At the
yeah.
front of the Odyssey, the main guy's name is Ulysses. It's obviously based off
Ulysses. By the way, is the Roman reading of Homer?
Huh?
In Roman tellings of the Odyssey, they call Homer Ulysses.
Homer.
It's Homer's The Odyssey, is it not?
Homer is the author of the Odysseys.
Wait, who's the main character?
Odysseus.
Odysseus
yeah.
is
and they call him Ulysses.
My bad. Yeah, Odysseus is Ulysses. My
right,
bad.
Sorry. Yeah. I just had brain problems.
Yeah, me too.
The Simpsons?
yeah, so the Coen brothers have said, obviously, this is based off the Odyssey. A lot of the events track pretty closely. I mean, like, there's some stuff that, like, doesn't really track exactly, like Homer Stokes. Mm. It's still unclear.
Well,
I was trying to find out who he is supposed to be.
They've never read the book.
That's the
yeah.
thing.
Yeah, so the only one who's read it is Delmar. That actor is the only one on set who had ever read
it. At the time they filmed anyways. Yeah.
Well, it's the thing. Same thing with Fargo. Because at the beginning of Fargo, it says this is based on a true story. And it was just a lie.
What is?
It's not based on a true story. It's just completely fiction. They just say that at the beginning of the movie. Yeah. It's actually kind of scandalous.
But I think it's kind of funny because it's like you would totally believe that it was based on a true story because the characters and everyone are so like
yeah.
ordinary. Mm. Which is part of its charm.
Not this one, though.
This one is not so...
They're not ordinary.
Ordinary, at but at the same time, I don't know, as a Canadian, I don't know anyone from Mississippi. So, like, I can sort of believe that in 1937, everybody's talking like this, mercy me, oh, Lord, oh, Lord, okay.
I mean, they probably talk like that, but I don't know, they're like, I won't use fop, I'm a Dapper Dan man.
I'm a
and,
Dapper
like, that's
Dan
his whole
man.
Personality. that part might
There's
not be
so
real.
Much Dapper Dan in this movie, too.
Yeah.
It's everywhere. But anyways,
wait a second. Who elected you leader of this outfit?
So the reason we brought up
the one with capacity for abstract thought. I love all his like wordy explanations for things.
Yes, it is so good.
He's like, I'm an educated man, but was he? I don't think he was.
Well, he was put in jail for practicing law without a license, so I think he could just. He was a bullshitter.
He had read enough to
convince people he was a lawyer. But,
yeah, yeah. What were you going to say? Sorry.
Well, I was going to close the loop on this whole thing is the reason we brought up this like Grand Wizard, potentially Grand Cyclops KKK rank is because you're tying into the analogs between the actual Odyssey and this movie. And like do all the things that they encounter, like the sirens, for example, those women. That's obviously from the Odyssey. So you're saying, it's actually what I thought as well, when they get to the KKK thing, is that, oh, they encounter a Cyclops just like Odysseus does.
Well, Big Dan is the Cyclops.
Yeah, Big Dan is the Cyclops because he has an eye patch, so he's a one-eyed person. But I also thought, oh, maybe that's the Cyclops, this you know, because I knew that the KKK had stupid ranks like that. In fact, I'm going to Google them because they're hilarious.
You're going to be on a watch list now.
Yeah, it's kind of annoying. I went and try and like find out exactly how all of the events in the movie correspond to the events in the Odyssey, but because it's apparently used in school a lot as a way to like help deconstruct the Odyssey, the actual Odyssey, all those lists are like locked behind paywalls because like these SparkNotes type sites have been like, you want the whole thing, you got to pay for it. And I was like, dang it. So you can see like the first page, but you can't see the second page. Anyways, we don't need to like fully break down how everything like
I was waiting for you to say you've maps. Done that and you made it open source. You made your own breakdown.
Nope.
With
I
quotes
didn't put
and
that
page
much
numbers.
Effort into it. But I guess I wanted to ask you guys if you felt, you were saying that it like, it moves really fast and a lot of things happen. Do you think that it was like unwise of them to try and like map everything on to the Odyssey so closely, because it's only an hour and 46 minutes and a lot of things happen, as you say. Mm-hmm. Was it too fast?
I don't think that was a concern of theirs. I don't think they're like, oh no, we're gonna map it one-to-one, because I don't think they did. A lot of things are quite different.
Yeah, but I mean, I think regardless, more like when I was writing the synopsis, I'm like, a lot of things happen here. Like there's a lot of like discrete encounters. First they meet this guy, and then they meet this guy, and then they barely escape from this guy, and then they meet these other people, and then they get seduced, and it's like there's a lot of random encounters.
They're just like fun little sketches.
Yeah. That's how I actually wrote down. It feels like a skit comedy. But I think because so much of it doesn't have any weight, it doesn't feel exhausting. Mm. Like it's going really fast, but because they don't care and it doesn't come up again, it doesn't matter for a lot of it. Like, oh, they almost got caught, but they're completely fine now.
And yeah, like that. The babyface like, okay. George thing stands out as being like its own. It's like a scene with no consequences. Yeah. I don't
but
think
that's
that even
funny
they just
thing.
Got a ride and then we're done with him.
That's a funny thing. I was writing the synopsis and I was basing it off of the Wikipedia one, and the Wikipedia one just completely skips George Nelson. And I was like, wait, there was something in between here. And I went and checked something else and I was like, oh yeah, there's George Nelson in there. Mm-hmm. Which is funny because it's a scene that you can skip and still kind of get the gist. Like it doesn't really affect the movie. But after that whole escapade where they rob the bank or whatever, they're sitting around the fire and he's like, oh, he's, you know, with these high risk taking types, they go up and then they got to come down. He'll be up again. I doubt it's the last we see of George Nelson. And then we do see him at the end. So it's like, even for this like little scene that doesn't really matter at all, they set something up and pay it off. And I feel
and actually
like,
a great joke too.
Yeah.
Cow killer. That's hilarious.
Yeah, and then when someone's like bringing the cow in behind the lynch mob.
So when he's walking away, I thought he was going to blow up. Because he had all the dynamite on him. He's going to walk into the distance and just explode.
Jeez.
He's like, I'm just going to go for a walk, guys.
Yeah, I was hoping for that, actually.
I feel like things like that are why I love the Coen brothers so much. Because even when the movie isn't like, has some ultimately unsatisfying elements to it, they are so tight at their craft. They know that when you set something up like that, you got to pay it off. So even if it doesn't end up meaning really anything, and even if it ends up just kind of contributing to the theme in sort of like a roundabout way and not really important, it's tight and you can feel that it's tight.
Yeah.
Because you're like, I remember that. You set that up and I wasn't even paying attention.
Totally. And I think, that's why that not mattering, it sounds like a negative thing, but I do agree. It feels positive because like even the bank robbery, they immediately lose the money. Oh, and then there's this app. He gets rearrested. They just break him out again. But it's just like funny. Yeah. It adds to that like lovable fever dream essence of this movie, especially with like the color grading. It just feels like you're in a dream.
Yeah.
But I actually really liked it.
Apparently, this was one of the first films to use like digital sepia tone color.
Yeah, because they like re-put it back on film after they grade it or something
like
that. Yeah, it's like one of the first movies in North America that had done it. It's like you have the film, then you grade it, and you put it back. I can't remember.
The movie was one of the first to extensively use digital color correction to give the film an autumnal sepia tinted look.
Oh, it's autumnal. That's a good word.
That is a good word.
One of the first to extensively use digital color correction in 2004? Oh, 2000.
Yeah, this is year 2000.
Oh, okay, sure. I mean, The Matrix came out to like 1999. I just figured by then they were using digital color correction, but there weren't a ton of digital movies at all, really, at that point, I guess.
Sure.
I don't know. I don't know what I'm talking about. But anyways, it looked beautiful. Also, Roger Deakins did the cinematography, who we've
bizarre
said many times is
one of the best
king of the world.
Speaking of kings of the world. Get a load of these stupid rankings. We were talking about the Cyclops and stuff from these, what would you call them, a cult? What the hell are they?
The KKK?
Yeah. I guess.
Cultish organization.
Clan? I think that's what the last K is.
Yeah, so they got like Grand Giant, who is assisted by four goblins. They got Titans.
What?
They got the Grand Dragons assisted by eight squires.
I did not know this.
Imperial Wizard? You didn't? Grand Scribe.
This is ridiculous.
Well, yeah, that's...
They're the most self-important, like neckbeardy, patriarchal
cool
kind
names,
of
though. Like, I want to be a goblin, but I want to be a
I want to be a goblin.
Wow, he's actually one of the goblins to the Grand Giant. That's crazy.
The Grand Giant.
Wow, his wife is so obedient. Sick.
So okay, let's try to make some sense of this movie. I guess who's the protagonist? You know,
it's obviously
it's Everett.
It's got to be Everett, but like in typical Coen Brothers fashion, there's no like character arcs. Everyone just ends the movie same place they started, basically.
Yeah,
that's what they always do, and they just focus on the wackiness of the story.
It's true. It's more about static characters. We talked a lot about this when we did.
Love
No Country.
No, you weren't there
Men.
For Lebowski.
No, I wasn't, which I was very sad about because I love that movie. We talked about this in No Country for Old Men, where, spoiler alert for No Country Old Men, skip ahead 20 seconds. The bad guy survives. He doesn't really learn anything. The other guy dies.
Llewellyn?
Right? I forget.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't remember.
Anyways, it's an interesting way to make film, and I'm surprised that I like it so much when the people aren't really learning things. But I think it's because they're so good at like injecting themes and imagery and meaning into the movie in so many other ways.
So I wish I did sequels. Like, you've just created this world that now I want to see more in because you haven't concluded anything. So I'm like, yeah. I want to see more. Like, I wish there was more Big Lebowski.
There should be a Coen Brothers multiverse movie where like the Jesus meets up with, what was his name, Dan in this movie?
Yeah, Big Dan.
No. The John Turturro character.
Oh, Pete.
Pete.
I love Pete.
Can you imagine?
And Barton Fink, they all get together.
Oh. John Turturro is amazing in this movie. I just love how like eccentric and weird he is.
Especially because he doesn't actually say or do that much. Because he's
the most eccentric thing he did, and I loved it so much, is when he does the yodeling.
Yeah,
and he's so good.
He has the perfect like 1,000-yard stare. Mm-hmm. Like his eyes just go like, duh, and he's like, I'm accessing the yodeling plane.
Yeah, yeah. His eyes are like rolling back in his head a little bit. He's like, for some reason. I don't know. It's like it's something that I maybe normally wouldn't like, but when he's getting whipped and tortured, his screams are like, they don't sound like somebody getting whipped. He's like, ah!
Yeah, that was actually spot on.
I was like, what is this? I don't know. I thought it was just perfect because I'm like, yeah, that's John Turturro.
Yeah.
He's not going to do a normal scream. He's going to do his own scream.
Fair. It paid off.
Is his mouth like naturally kind of sideways or... Does he just do that on a character by character just basis?
Talks to the side.
Like his bottom jaw is kind of like, just kind of over there.
I wasn't paying enough attention.
I think he just looks like that.
He's a fella.
What are the themes? What are the themes
loyalty.
In this movie? Loyalty?
Loyalty.
To who?
Well, that's the whole thing with Odyssey and with this movie. Because the whole deal in the Odyssey is that Odysseus is gone for like 20 years. And then politically back home, they're making his wife remarry.
Have you read The Odyssey?
Of course.
I have not.
No, I'm just joking. No.
I knew it.
She's being forced to remarry, like, and she's given like the choice of among 100 suitors or something like that.
Mm.
And so he's just hoping that he's going to get there in time. And her to still be his wife, and that's kind of what's going on here. But it's kind of flipped here, is it? I don't know.
Well, I think she has suitors. It's Vernon.
It's one guy.
Yeah. I mean, he's like represents all of them, I guess he could. I feel like
she's not forced to remarry, though. It's just totally in her camp. She wants the bona fides.
Yeah.
This guy's not bona fide.
Bonafide.
Yeah, that's sort of a theme, kind of like, you know, trying to work your way up into the elite echelons of society. And can you do that by swindling your way there, or can you, or do you have to work hard, maybe?
Well, he gets in trouble for manipulating and lying people. That's what got him into prison, right? Mm. And then that's how he gets out of prison, too. He lies to the people he is locked to. He says, yeah, there's this treasure buried over there. Let's go.
Right, right.
And they help him escape based on that.
I feel like... I guess that's sort of related to this. I feel like the most interesting theme for me was them being convicts and like as they're going through these adventures, kind of like having discussions and encounters that make them ruminate on the law and human institutions and what you're supposed to do in society versus kind of like a non-human frame of mind, or like a broader kind of like mystic sort of view of what's going on.
Right, that kind of ties into that line where they're saying like, oh, well, I'm saved now, I'm good to go. It's like, yeah. Not according to the state of Mississippi.
Right, and I love the inversion there because Everett says, you fools, you tried to get saved, you know, in a spiritual sense, but you're not saved in a practical sense. But at the end, they get there and they have been saved in a practical sense, but Sheriff Cooley is like, they're like, oh, it's the law. And he's like, the law is a human institution.
Because he's Satan.
Yeah. Right? He represents this sort of more primordial, like deeper force that you can't run from.
He gets described as Satan though. Because
he's the dog.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
the eyes and the white man from, what's his face? Tommy.
Tommy Johnson.
He like pretty much describes Sheriff Cooley.
Right. It implies that Sheriff Cooley represents the devil
that he sold his soul to. Yeah. And then when you see him, the first like couple scenes he's in, he always has fire reflecting in his glasses.
Yeah, yeah.
Sunglasses at night kind of character, you know?
Which is funny because I read that he represents Poseidon? Because I guess, is Poseidon?
Poseidon is always an antagonistic to Odysseus.
In the Odyssey?
Yeah.
Okay, well, there you go.
He's always trying to kill him.
Does he have a hound? The hound is the trident.
I think it's a dolphin, actually.
He's grabbing it by its non-existent neck.
No, you just plug... You get two dolphins, you put two fingers in each blowhole, and then you ride. They drag you along like that.
And I love...
You gotta hold your breath.
Yeah, it's all good.
I love how at the end, he's faced with Sheriff Cooley being like, no, you haven't outrun fate. And so then he like breaks down and he's like, okay, my only option left is to appeal to this, you know, thing that I don't believe in, I guess. He prays to God. And then his prayers are quote-unquote answered. The valley is flooded. And then he immediately goes back to just being kind of like
that's
a skepticist,
least
narcissist.
Favorite part of the movie.
Yeah.
That he really? Reneges on it?
No, that the flood even happens.
That they get saved?
I'm like, it's like, what do they call it? Deus Ex Machina?
It's not, though, because it is set up.
Yeah.
In a way.
I heard,
it's just
I saw
like,
people...
oh, there'll be a... it's going to flood in 4 days. And then we watch like seven nights in the movie. I'm
but
like,
they,
okay.
They say it multiple times, and it's also in like the newspaper that gets burned
so
in the foreground.
Weird, because it's like, oh, whatever will they do? Giant flood literally washes away the house and everybody.
But that's
all the
why it's
guys.
Perfect.
Like,
that's why it's perfect, because if it wasn't set up at all, then it would be a Deus Ex Machina. But because it has been set up multiple times, we're hearing about a flood the whole movie, and so when it actually happens, you're like, it's kind of like a puzzle piece like slotting into place. You're like, this is fate. This was always going to happen. And so but then that is perfect, because that brings up the question. It's like, you know, if we didn't have that, could it be like, we would probably be thinking, what? So Everett's prayers worked or whatever?
They did work.
God?
Yeah, they did work.
They did work.
But it was also always going to happen. So then there's also sort of a deterministic thing.
Literally worked, because if he didn't pray, he could have got hanged 30 seconds earlier and died. And then the flood still happens, but the flood doesn't save him.
I guess so, yeah. But regardless, I'm saying that, that's still not like a supernatural explanation.
That's
But yeah.
But we know it was.
What?
It was God.
We know that it was God.
Yeah.
I just, you know, it's perfect Coen Brothers stuff, because they will kind of like reference these things and kind of like trick you into considering them, and then they'll flip it right back, and at the end he's, you know, back to skepticism.
Yeah, that's the closest thing to an arc, because his compatriots get saved earlier on. And but he's the only one, he's the holdout, right? And then he, you know, he attacks them for doing that, says it's stupid, belittles their decisions. So it's kind of like, oh, finally, this is his chance now. He finally comes around and like closes the loop on his arc of repentance.
Is like, I liked his character, especially because there's the campfire scene before the second time Sheriff Cooley almost catches him. And they're talking about, what would you do with the money? And like Pete says, he wants a maitre d'. Is that what
Yeah, he wants to like start a restaurant.
Yeah, Delmar wants land. And Everett's just like, oh, and like kind of shuffles away the question and actually never answers because he knows there's no money.
Because he never thought about it.
Yeah, he's like, oh, I never thought. Even Pete calls him out. He's like, that doesn't sound like you. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, the police are here. Like all of a sudden it switches off. So when it pays off to there is no money, it's like, oh, that makes sense. That's why he didn't think about what he's going to do with $400,000, because he was never going to have $400,000. Yeah.
He would have thought about what he's going to do with 1.2. Because originally we should have had that.
I loved that scene where they're talking about their plans with the money, because I feel like it's a really great moment of characterization.
Not just plot, but characterization.
Yeah, and it was really interesting because Pete's dream is to, like, you'd imagine that someone with, what was it, $1.2 million in 1937? That's a lot of freaking money. And his dream is to start a restaurant, not so that he can like be on top, but so that he can be the maitre d' of the restaurant and meet people who are truly elite and have like a few underlings being like, yes, sir, no, sir, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And then the last thing he says is, and all my meals for free.
I know, yeah. It's like his ambition is limited.
Yeah, I just thought that was a great moment of characterization of in the sense that these are people who don't even... like they're not even able to conceive of a world in which they are truly on top. Like their dreams are just to not be complete nobodies wallowing in the mud.
Like he wants food in the belly. You don't realize
he just wants
that
free meals, but it wouldn't.
That's not free, buddy.
You're paying for it. Yeah, yeah.
But they don't charge me.
Right. And Delmar has this limited conception of what it means to be a man. You ain't no kind of man if you don't got land, he says. So it's like, I love the characterization of both of them. They have these limited ideas, and then it goes to Everett. And at first, I'm like, oh, that's weird that I actually didn't get that he didn't say a plan because there's no treasure.
Well, it's because it's foreshadowing.
Right.
We don't know yet.
And I'm like, this is a weird opportunity to not characterize Everett. But I think maybe that's because we get so much characterization from him
all the
time.
Even the fact that it's 1.2 million is characterizing him because he's overshooting it. It's like, that's an unrealistic amount of money.
Is it?
Totally,
man. Earlier they get paid $10.
Yeah, they're
like
in like the middle of nowhere too. It's like, okay, well, why just, was this random?
Where did
town?
He even get that much
I just
money?
Figured it was just like a bunch of gold. I don't know. Like at that point.
I guess.
Yeah, but I love that we still get characterization of Everett through all these other interactions. You know, we figure out that he's vain. He sort of like obviously has a high opinion of himself. He's very sort of pseudo-educated, not really. But
so you've added on this last that last section there. But before, I was going to interrupt you. The Dapper Dan conversations and everything remind me of both of you.
Why?
Because you're both gel men. I look over. You're in
it's
the
not
mirrors.
Gel.
Sorry.
Not all of us can have this fop. Okay.
Yeah. Sorry that we have to do our hair to have it make
no. Your hair is just like every time sitting there all wavy and nice.
Every time I was watching the movie a couple times, and I'd just be like, it's just Riley there in the mirror. I see him. He's getting his coffee ready in the mirror.
Listen.
Doing his hair.
What do you do to
he's a
your
Dapper
hair?
Dan
what
man.
Do you do to your hair in the morning?
I wake up. I shower. And then I take a boar hair here. Brush and I just brush my hair.
Boar hair?
Boar hair.
Wow.
Nothing too exciting.
That would be great. I would love to be able to do that.
Do you wear a hairnet?
No.
I actually was inspired by this guy because he was putting so much product in his hair. I was like, maybe that's what I need to do because nothing appears to have enough hold for me.
George Clooney?
Remember, he's just like tapping the comb against the side of the.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't know if you were talking about him or me. Though.
It was thick.
Yeah, this guy. I was talking about you.
Well, I don't know. I'm right.
You inspire me.
I thought you were talking to him.
I was talking to him.
I know. I inspire you already. I just didn't know it was about the hair. any significance to that? We already talked about multiple blind people, but do you guys think there's any significance to that?
Well, one of them, the guy who runs the radio place, is just. That's a convenience, like plot convenience, because the whole time nobody knows who the Soggy Bottom Boys are, what they look like. So that includes the one staff member at the radio station. Right?
Yeah.
The other time, I guess it just adds to the mysticism of the fortune teller person.
Yeah, it's a trope. Just magical black man helps the people and tells them what their fortune is, which was a nitpick of mine. It's like, that's just so cheesy and like lame and something that probably, well, at the time, I guess, was not, you know, something that should have been canceled, but I'm like, it's just so lame.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I do wonder, though,
The Coen brothers are Jewish, eh?
Oh, that makes it fine.
Yeah.
They also didn't even help them, like, push the cart, which I thought was funny.
That annoyed me, too.
On the cart,
and I'm like, that would slow you down.
Yeah. What do you mean? Putting more people on the cart?
Because the blind man is, like, doing it, and they don't help him move the cart at all, so they're just sitting there.
Well, he's magical. He's got magical magical blind black man powers.
I was thinking about, like, how long can I pump that thing for? Like, that... I would suck after probably 10 minutes.
Buff.
I'm imagining that character, though, as a white guy. And I'm like, I feel like that just makes it worse. I feel like the fact that there are people and we see the signs of like still there being like heavy oppression in that period still, you know, like all the people, all the prisoners are black except for these guys, basically. They're doing the work everywhere. And I feel like having that be sort of still a member of the quote unquote other at that time. I don't know. It like adds to the character.
I think it's because he's magical.
I mean, this is why the magical black man trope exists.
Yeah, he could have just been wise, but no, he's magical.
Why do you think that they
well,
open the
seer.
Movie?
Well, he's a seer. That's
exactly it. He's magical. He could have just been like, oh, it reminds me of a story about, or like, oh, well, I've learned everything that goes up must come down. Like he could have just been wise, but it's like, he's like you said, a seer.
Well, he is. He does. He does.
He has to say fantastical things like a cow on a roof.
He does correspond.
Work that into a story.
He does correspond to Tiresias, who is a blind prophet of Apollo in the Odyssey, and he gives them a prophecy about their journey.
And he was definitely white.
Yeah. Well,
or who even knows back then?
Yeah, I don't know.
Turkish?
So anyways.
Yeah. Why do you think they open the movie with that sequence of the chain gang singing and busting up rocks? And then it just kind of like fades to black and the movie like starts over.
Yeah.
And you see another group of prisoners. Well, you see...
The only thing that
for the
really,
first time you see white prisoners running away.
The funny thing is that the only thing that really makes that weird is the fact that they fade to black and then fade back in and they're running away from the chain gang.
But
they could have like made that all the same scene basically and have them still like singing in the background. But these
characters don't look anything like any of the characters in the chain gang. There's a clear racial difference there.
I wonder what that's
what's
about.
Up with that?
I don't understand.
Is it just a song they wanted to have on the soundtrack?
Because that song is actually from like way back in the day.
It's an
actual recording of prisoners singing on a chain gang.
Wow.
You mean not just the song, but that recording?
That recording, yeah.
Wow.
Which I think is really interesting. And I wonder if they were just like, maybe there's a reason they can't have it on at the same time as the new footage. I don't understand what that fade to black was either. Like, I don't know what it added.
Who knows? Maybe they just were like, we need to like set the tone of the movie. We're going to open with this. And
yeah.
That was just the most...
And I think it did a good job at that because it definitely kind of like brings you into the fact that like, all right, this is the setting. This is the bleakness that people are facing. There's going to be a lot of singing.
What are they doing, by the way? So there's an existing road. There's a pile of rocks on the side of the road. Are they pulverizing it so that the road has like gravel on it? Like maybe. 3/4-inch crush?
Making gravel? Yeah, I don't know.
What are they doing?
What are they doing over there?
2022, we have no idea why chain gangs exist.
Yeah, machines that do that.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
What song are they singing? No.
Days never finished, master got me working. Someday Lord he set me free.
It's not the same one as they sing at the end when they're like about to go in the graves and the three
just
black
pause
guys
for
are
a
there.
Second, it was a weird thing for me to sing. I think...
Okay. Are you gonna apologize?
No, I just think I'm like trying to think like where do I know that from? I think Cartman sings that in a South Park when he's like
that sounds like it's something that could be offensive then, but I was gonna say the wheels on the bus. The wheels on the bus go round and round just as they're working.
They didn't have that back then.
Yeah, I guess
that's Forrest
Gump
era.
Yeah.
You got to go to the Lonesome Valley.
That's my favorite song.
You should be in a chain gang.
Yes, sir.
You don't have the ankles for it. But yeah, there's some cool hand Luke stuff going on. Have you seen that movie?
No.
But it has like prisoners in a chain gang kind of thing going on as well. And that's the movie that has the whole like, I don't know, taking a drink now, boss. Taking a drink, then, son. You know, like they do that call and response between the prison guard and the prisoner.
Oh,
wiping it off, boss. Wipe it off, then.
Sheriff Cooley has been compared to Boss Godfrey in Cool Hand Luke. Just so you know, that's according to...
You gotta have your movie history.
Man, I find myself with a shockingly little amount to say about this. I think particularly because when I was watching, it was hard for me to write notes. I asked you guys about the pace of it earlier, and what I meant to say was that I found the pace kind of, it's like very, very engaging, which made it hard for me to write notes.
Mm-hmm. I wrote almost nothing
so
down.
Fast. Yeah.
I wrote down a couple of my favorite jokes where I lolled.
Yeah.
And that was about it.
You lolled?
Yeah, I tried to do that in the beginning too.
I feel like they also answer a lot of the questions that they set up. So like, what do we discuss about something that's answered in the movie, I guess? Like, I don't know. They don't leave a whole lot open other than just the ending, because it just ends. And it's like, where are even Pete and Delmar? It's just like, I'm not going to get married to you. And he goes, ah, what's I want to marry you.
Well,
the
they went
over.
On, and I mean, that's sometime later, I guess.
What's the deal with her saying, I counted to three?
She's made up her mind. She's counted to three.
I made up my mind, counted to three.
And
she's like, she counted to three. God damn it. You hear her? She counted to three.
We got to go get that ring.
I think that's just as like, he knows from being she's married to her mind, yeah. that means that there's no more discussion about it. I love his, like, I love his...
He really has to swim to the bottom of that damn lake.
I think it's implied that they're not going to get remarried now because he can't go get it.
I thought he was doing it.
We'll have to wait
they
for
didn't
the
have scuba equipment at that time.
Just hold your breath.
Get a long pipe.
A real long pipe.
He could figure it out.
Yeah, bamboo shoot, like they do in the old cartoons.
That's so brother, thou art.
They do
in the
some
lake.
Some people dive,
brother.
Like in the Philippines and stuff, people dive just with air compressors and hoses. It's really bad for you.
Yeah,
but
so I wouldn't
so
recommend
he should not
that
do
he,
that. Yeah,
but he could.
Everett, don't do that.
It's low tech.
Man, I feel like this is a Coen Brothers thing where they don't really like it's almost like there are ups and downs, but it's almost like while you're watching the movie, it's never so engrossing that you are like feeling super big emotions.
This
it's
is
just
exactly
kind of
what
all,
I said.
It's
about
like an even keel.
This is exactly my status, my not status, my slogan.
Your synopsis, your slogan.
My slogan, I was just like, it's okay. Like, if it's on, you're like, I'm watching this.
I don't know. It feels like a play. Like, I don't
yeah.
feel like there's any danger, but I'm like enjoying my time watching it the entire time from start to finish.
Are you saying that there's no plays have high stakes or danger or that you're emotionally invested in?
In what? No.
You haven't seen enough plays.
I've seen.
You played yourself.
Two. I've seen many plays.
You know what I'll say is that this movie probably would be significantly worse if not for the music. Like, I feel like I give, what did I give it? 8.5?
Like it's a music movie.
I feel like it might be like a 6 if the music wasn't there.
Yeah, I agree with you. I have a 6.9. It could easily be a 6.
They're also very long scenes. Like the music, the concert is a long scene. The initial recording of the song is a long scene.
They show a lot of it.
Yeah, yeah. It's like the
they play
entire,
like the full, yeah.
entire song. Like it is, it's long.
They harmonize beautifully though.
Oh, for sure.
Another thing that's kind of like, come on. How can these three guys who are chained together just happen to be the best band in the land?
Makes I think back in the day, you didn't have anything to do.
True.
Yeah,
like,
so
you may
so
as well
saying.
Sing gospel songs or whatever they were listening to back then.
Yeah, and I mean, they were on the Chain Gang, so they obviously practiced singing a little bit. And the other guy sold his soul to the devil, so they're...
Well, yeah, okay, that's yeah. explained.
It's a freaking jam.
And he was
that's
very
canon.
Good.
That's canon.
We know that. It's earned.
Well, and apparently that's based off, I mean, a legend about an existing...
an existing guitar player, like a real person.
Something Johnson. His name is also Johnson.
It is something
I
Johnson.
Lost it.
Muddy Waters. Jimi Hendrix?
Oh, Tommy
Jimmy Johnson.
Johnson. He shares his name and story with Tommy Johnson, a blues musician who is said to have sold his soul to the devil. Also attributed to Robert Johnson. Another black blues
I
musician.
I also sold my soul to the devil.
It seems like at that time...
My brother
like
also
time,
sold his soul to the devil.
White people couldn't quite conceptualize how black people were so good at music.
Hey,
they must have sold their soul to the devil.
Something's going on here. You can't be better
than
me.
Hey, wait a second. I thought we were the boss. That's messed up.
Get used to it.
I don't... Yeah, what is... Oh, I think we're going to nitpicks and hitpicks.
Right? Oh, let me hit that button then.
Nitpicks.
Oh, that slaps so good.
Related to what we were just saying, what we were just saying, great line. Delmar says, "Oh, son, For that you traded your everlasting soul? Well, I wasn't using it.
Hell yeah.
Just sitting around.
God, the quotes are so good. I love when he goes to buy the Dapper Dan. He's like, well, ain't this place a geological oddity? It's 2 weeks from everywhere. Yeah. Like, that is so good.
There's so many.
That one didn't stand out to me. I thought, like, one of the funniest parts of the whole thing was when they finally get Pete back. And then Delmore's like, we thought you were a toad. And then Pete's like, what?
We thought
you was a toad.
He's just, it's
do
so
do not seek the treasure.
That whole theater scene is so funny. Do not seek the treasure.
Yeah, What's the deal with that? It's like a yelling whisper.
Exactly, because they're in a movie theater.
What? You was.
That's so funny.
So good. What? That corresponds to the part of the Odyssey where he goes to Hades or something and the spirits warn him against doing so, like the spirits of his dead compatriots. But I guess Pete is like, they think he's dead, but then he's not.
Mm-hmm. It also corresponds. The main character is a frog in Odyssey.
Well, nope, that's not true.
Like he speaks French? Oh,
that's not
the French had it hard enough.
Are you thinking of Ratatouille? And that's a rat?
that one's a rat, yeah.
How about the sirens, though?
That was a weird scene.
I thought it was well done.
Why did he leave his clothes like that?
It also makes me slightly
uncomfortable. He left on his own volition. He left his clothes laid out like there's a person there.
No, I think the idea is that they got him naked because they were seducing him, and then they dragged him off to the authorities.
I know, so who left his clothes shaped like a man?
The toad actually set him up like that.
Why was there a toad in his shirt?
Looking for flies? He doesn't look like he smells that good.
I mean, true.
Why are his clothes like that? I don't know, because then it works better.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like this is the type of movie.
There's a few things like that in this movie. Like, where do you get those beards from? They just show up on stage with these beards. Like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah, Tommy all of a sudden has his guitar after being kidnapped by the KKK. He's just at the concert with his guitar. He's like, all right.
I don't know. I think they had his guitar.
Who?
I think
the KKK.
The three dudes.
Maybe, because that's the Homer Stokes was at the KKK.
Took their guitar with them?
It came out of nowhere.
No, but they're playing random instruments. Like, they're playing banjo in the car at a certain point.
There probably was a guitar around, and he just grabbed it.
That's
doesn't
guitar
matter.
Case.
I don't
know. Magical, too.
Okay, yeah. I mean, there's a number of things like that early on. They just, like, suddenly they don't have a car, and then they have a car, and, you know, it's fine.
Hit pick.
Don't worry about it.
When the guy's saying that he's going to pay them to after they sing into the can, and then Everett, like, on his feet's like...
Steven Root, by the way.
He's like, there's six of us here.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Only four of us can write.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That was very funny.
On account of two of us can only sign X's or whatever. Yeah,
because only four of us can write. And it's like...
That's a good line.
And it's also a subtle way to make the joke. It's not like two on the nose. You have to like compute it for a second. You're like,
Yeah, related to that, I like how they had a pretty diverse cast, but there weren't too many tropes or stereotypes. Like the blind guy, they didn't make fun of him at any point in time. There was never jokes about people's looks. It was always about the character themselves and the person themselves, because I feel like so many comedies, it's like making fun of people and you're laughing at this weird person versus like the stuff that they get into.
Yeah, they use a small person in this movie to characterize a bad guy, I guess. Remember they have the they refer to him as a midget on the stage, like sweeping up. Is that meant to characterize or like foreshadow that this governor, the guy riding or trying to be governor, could end up being evil?
No, he's like, I don't have another word for it back in the 30s.
I know that, but I'm just saying for the audience, it's like, oh, he's kind of using this person as a gimmick.
Well, I think...
And we later learn that he's a KKK wizard or whatever.
Well, he was using him because he's like, I'm for the little man, and then he had a little man with him.
Yeah, which is like, I understand why he's doing it, but for the audience, you're like, yeah, that's kind of gross to do that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that would be gross to do now, but I feel like when I see that and it's set in 1937, I'm like, probably no one has a problem with this.
Yeah, I know that, but you do as the audience, so it's foreshadowing for you. It's like
even in 2000,
it's an out of universe foreshadowing. You know what I'm saying?
That wouldn't indicate that he's a bad person in 1937. That would just indicate that he's no one thinks
you keep
twice
talking
about that.
And I keep wanting to give you the exact same explanation.
So I understand but I still also think that in 2000 that people probably wouldn't have thought that was that offensive.
Yeah, for sure.
See, now that's a rub bottle. You see that?
No, I'm saying regardless of what the audience in 2000 or at the time you're watching, regardless of what we think of it at that time,
you would still think it's normal.
Yeah, so no one would identify offensive. That. Like,
I know,
in
right.
order for your argument to work, people in the movie would also be able to identify that as something
no,
bad.
No, that's not my argument at all.
Well, you're wrong. Riley on this well, I'm saying in order for your argument to work, that would have to be the case.
I know what you're saying.
Because it had to be done purposely.
It's wrong, though.
No, it's not. I'm right.
What do you think? Leave a comment down below.
This is just about, you know, do you watch movies in the context of their time, or do you watch them in the context of modern time?
No, it's not about that.
Yes,
anyways,
it is.
Here's two actual nitpicks. When they're running toward the train at the beginning, like they're going to try to hop on it, they're sprinting towards this train, and then you can see the conductor riding in his engine. And he doesn't even look out over at them. He just stares forward.
I was thinking about that as well. And I was kind of like, maybe he just doesn't care. Like, you're not going to stop the train
like
to kick off three
it's
dudes.
It's so but common I, that you, he's yeah. just like, whatever.
Yeah, because I also was like, when did they start further down the train then? Like, if they're going to show the conductor, like, clearly right there.
But I just wanted the conductor to, like, shoulder check and be like, ah! You know, like, look in their direction. Because there's no way he didn't see them.
Well, I think it's just like... He's probably tried to deal with this a few times, and it happens so often that he's just kind of like, eh.
Did you notice that the flower bags the homeless guys were in front of are Papi O'Donnell's, the governor?
Oh, Papi O'Daniels?
That's it. Yeah, it had his face and name on the
flower. Oh, that's pretty funny.
Pappy's Poppies.
Love the early, right after they get the prophecy, he's like, well, how could he make those prophecies about it or whatever? He's like, well, it's, you know, Everett says, well, it's natural that, you know, someone deprived of their other senses would maybe develop an extra sensory perception or whatever, blah, blah, have some like supernatural abilities. And the person's like, he said we wouldn't get the fortune. He's like, well, he's an ignorant old man, Pete. What do you expect?
Yeah.
He just immediately switches.
Nitpick, the lake baptism, like when they're all singing in the forest.
Yeah.
It sounds great,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't sound like they're singing in a forest. It really sounds like it's recorded in a building. You can hear like the reverb of the of the building they're in.
But I think that's supposed to be because it's like, oh, we're having a mystical moment or whatever.
It's where, again, the fever dream thing ties into it, where I feel like it just explains away all of it of being like, oh, this is just like a weird imagining.
And maybe.
It's like in Lord of the Rings.
Or it's like an original recording like that other song you're talking about, and they just wanted to use it. And it's like, don't listen too closely because it really doesn't fit. It seems like bad ADR to me.
I think it was very intentional.
It's immersion breaking.
Really good. It feels like... the Rivendell in Lord of the Rings or something, where everything's kind of got like a glossy, not glossy, but like a
shimmer,
a faded out quality to it, and like people's voices have sort of like a little bit of a
especially because the audio is pretty good in this movie.
Oh,
like,
I
feel like if they really wanted to have it be like it was in a forest, they would have. Because I remember when the kid shoots the gun as they're walking up to Hogwash's house, I got startled because a gunshot actually like came out of my surround sound.
Oh wow!
And I was like, oh.
Yeah,
it's not just like a flat movie like many are. So I feel like if they've gone through the effort to do some scenes where it actually is very directional, they probably could have just...
I think the fact that it was immersion breaking for you is valid, James.
Thank you.
But it was intentional and it enhanced it for us.
That's great. That kid was one of the worst parts of the movie. Like when he comes in and saves them.
That was so cheesy in such a negative way. The kid just hops in the car, breaks you.
Really?
Get in, guys.
You didn't like that?
And to make it even worse,
that was great.
Is after he saves them, and apparently, like, drives them far enough away that the cops aren't an issue anymore. They're just like, get out of here, kid. Go home.
Yeah.
I'm like, what?
And then he walks in the direction that they're driving, which is the wrong way. So I was like, okay.
Maybe it's closer to town. I don't know.
They're assholes.
But it's...
What do you mean?
Yeah, they're
assholes. That was so great. Come on, guys. We're going to R-U-N-N-O-F-T. And it's like, okay, so he knew. They're spelling it so that he doesn't understand, but he understands.
Yeah,
it was great. It was a great little moment.
That was a very, very, concise... tight way to get across like some resentment that he has for his dad, because he knows, because his dad spells out the runoff thing when he's talking about his mom leaving.
He said it so often that the kid knows what it means now in context, just in letters instead of the word.
I never thought of it like that.
I just love how it's both an incorrect grammatical phrase and also spelled wrong.
Yeah,
like she run offed. Like she ran off is what you mean to say, but then you want to say run offed, and then you spell it with a T.
I think it should be a word now.
His mother's run offed. It could be passed. It could be passed.
I know. I love the double layer there.
It is.
In that scene where the baptism scene or whatever, before that Delmar, I don't know why. There are things like this that happen in the movie, and I'm just like, I'm trying to decipher it. Delmar offers Everett the gopher. He's like three times.
Gopher?
He's like, yeah, gopher? And he just like keeps talking about other stuff.
I can't get a good coiffeur anywhere.
Yeah, yeah. Gopher? And he's like, yeah, gopher. And he's like, as they start realizing everyone's walking down, he's like, I think a third of a gopher would only whet my appetites for more or something. And he's like, you can have the whole thing. We shared about it. And it's like they're talking about the gopher as like the film is completely shifting focus away from their conversation to what's happening.
Yeah, that was really funny. Hit pick for me. I liked the fight between Everett and Waldrig. I don't remember his first name.
Vernon Waldrip. Vernon
Waldrip, that's right.
Yeah. Waldrip.
I thought it was just so funny how they go in like the old timey fighting stance and start punching each other. And then, I don't know, just as soon as it ends, he like turns into an incel. It's like, never trust a female, Delmar. Females will always break your heart. I'm like, okay, as soon as he loses the fight.
I love that whole monologue.
I watched a video once on explaining like why they used to use that fighting stance, but I can't remember anymore. It was like, I think it has to do with, like, because it's bare knuckle.
It keeps the person away from you.
Yeah, it has to do with range because, like, there's no glove. It was bare knuckle boxing and just couldn't take that many hits or something like that.
Oh, interesting.
Vernon, I love Vernon Waldrip's, like, wide eyes the whole time. He's just, like, staring with his...
Mm-hmm.
And he's, like, shifting his eyes around.
Dude, the actor who plays Delmar. I love that actor's performance. No, I love Delmar. Tim Blake Nelson. He's so good at looking dumb.
He's amazing. Oh,
whereas, like, John Turturro can look... He looks dumb in a caricature way.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, Tim Blake Nelson, you're just like, he just looks like a low IQ individual. He's so good at it.
This is one of his first acting roles, too. It's like his third.
Really?
The Coen brothers had never seen him act before. They just, like, knew who he was. He was, like, a neighbor or something like that. And they gave him the script, and he was like, am I just supposed to read over this? And they're like, no, we want you to, like, be one of the main guys.
What?
Like, huh?
Wow, he's only 58.
He looks awful.
He looks older.
Half his IMDb is in pre-production right now, or in production.
He's popular.
Right now.
He was
in Watchmen. Great show.
Oh, the show?
Yeah.
He's been in a ton of stuff.
Wade Tillman.
Apparently.
Oh, he was Looking Glass?
Yeah.
So these other characters, professional musicians, did all the singing.
Mm-hmm.
There may be other characters that did it as well, but I think some musicians like performed their own stuff on like the stage scenes and stuff. Like the actual musicians, not the real, like they weren't important in the movie. But Tim Blake Nelson did his own singing and in the jailhouse now.
It was a good song too.
Because, man, when he starts singing, I'm just like, that has to be him because it's like so perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Like it does sound like him, whereas, but they also did a really good job casting the singers for, like, I believed that was,
oh, 100%.
I knew it wasn't
George Clooney's voice. I did not.
When I first watched it.
George Clooney was played by Dan Timinsky for the singing and John Turturro as Harley Allen. But, when they start singing, you're like, they did a really good job of casting. Because
you
I
don't go
it was
like, well, you did, but I did not go like, oh, that there's 100% no chance it's George Clooney.
I was like, there's probably 85% to 90% chance that's not George Clooney. Mm-hmm. It didn't sound like it would be his voice.
I think I had heard him try to sing before and he was tone deaf or something. So,
hit pick. The acting is so good for all the secondary characters. I mean, the main as well. Like Daniel Von Bargen, who's the sheriff. Very unsettling.
Yeah.
The daughters talking about being bona fide.
Oh,
he's
hilarious.
A suitor. So funny. And all of them.
he's
bona fide. He's a suitor. Big Dan being so ruthless and so charismatic. Like it was.
Yeah, I mean, John
so
Goodman.
Good. Except for he squished the frog.
Yeah.
That was hilarious when he threw it against the tree.
That was just
so good.
But yeah, just all the secondary actors.
You got squished.
So
also,
good.
Mrs. Incredible is as Penny is his wife.
No way.
Holly Hunter.
Oh, I hate those.
The voice of Mrs. Incredible.
Those hats. Oh, the worst hats.
Oh,
that's not a good
speaking
hat.
Of Holly Hunter. Oh, the hats.
I don't like it.
Don't get me started on the hats. Their dances were a big hit pick for me. Anytime characters are dancing in this movie, mostly at the end on the stage
there. The KKK
there.
Has moves. Oh, you mean the main guys?
The KKK.
I wonder if that's
visual.
I wonder if that's real at all because like I'm like, this is a whole...
I honestly,
a whole
that's what made me think that it wasn't real. I'm like, this is an ordeal.
Yeah.
Like, wow, that's a lot of people to learn.
I could see them doing it, honestly.
I can imagine the Coen brothers kind of trolling the KKK by making them do this silly dance.
But there's so many like large groups of men doing big dance things. Like you've seen those YouTube videos of like a bunch of Muslims at some kind of celebration or Jews as well. And they're all dancing in this weird way and it's only guys there.
Weird.
And you just put like a... turned down for what on it or something. Have you seen those videos? So funny.
Well, like at an Indian wedding or something, and it's just like a big giant train going through. That's a good time.
Excuse me?
What? I can't say Indian wedding?
Train? I don't know what you're talking about.
What?
No, I haven't seen it with,
jeez, Louise.
I haven't seen it with an Indian
conversation.
Wedding, but like, yeah, it'll be like a group of, like a big religious group of guys in like religious garb, and they're all like, I don't know.
Talking about religious stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought you were just talking about like big giant groups of men dancing religions. Together.
Yeah, that's what. Yeah, it's not an indie Wendy thing.
AKA My Saturday Night.
You should see these videos. They're hilarious. What can I Google for that?
Anyways,
by the way, there was like, speaking of Googling random stuff, remember at the, it's when the guy who was supposed to be mayor, who was like the good guy, turns out is revealed to be the bad guy, and the mob like carries him out. And
I did not think that was real. That is a real thing.
I was like, what?
Ride him out of town on a rail.
Run out of town on a rail.
So I Googled like mob carry wood, and I was like, there's no way I'm ever going to get that. But yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's called riding a rail.
A lot of the time that the rail thing would involve like tarring and feathering.
Yeah,
and then they dump
like
them out.
Public humiliation.
Yeah, they dump them on the outskirts of town.
So I'm going to see what stupid combination of words I can get to be like group of religious men.
Don't do it.
Dancing.
What?
Song. Yes, that's exactly it. Like Islamic remix dance,
okay,
that's
like
one.
Eastern Europe
Muslim style techno dance. Here's a good one. Muslim versus Jewish dance off. These are hilarious.
Those are Orthodox Jews. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of really cool dances done by large groups of men primarily.
And when you put a random song on it.
Fine, the KKK dance is okay. Okay.
Anyways,
I just love
anyways,
how goofy
that's why
it looks.
I think it could be realistic that they actually did these crazy like the army loves like drill and marching around and stuff. They had some of that in the ceremony we see.
I just thought some of the moves they did were just like kind of outlandish.
Mm-hmm. Dude, their views are outlandish. And look
well,
what they're
sure.
wearing. They're
so
eccentric people.
It very well could be real.
Either
it
way,
could also be a troll.
The Soggy Bottom Boys did dance funny, and I also liked
it.
Like where he doesn't move his upper body at all at the concert. He just moved dancing with his legs.
Right,
I was
right.
like, this is so funny.
And Delmar singing like, I had a friend named that. And Pete's in the background doing this like,
yeah,
like just going back and forth with his arms, going like I don't even know what to call it.
Audio listeners have no idea what.
Yeah,
I don't know what he's doing either. It's
at
crazy.
Some point, they got their arms like linked together, and they're going in a circle, like kind of going forward and then going back and then going forward.
It's very just, hillbilly.
It is like I don't even know. Yeah, I guess so. I've never seen a real hillbilly.
Yeah, but if you
dance,
had to improvise it, and they were like, "Hey, you just dance like a hillbilly." Was, you would do that.
It was like Ministry of Silly Walks, Monty Python level of
yes.
of silliness, 100%. And I
no,
loved it.
No, but that's British, though.
By far, my biggest hit pick, which is, like, not really saying much. Anyways, the point that I was most impressed with the movie was the George Nelson scene where he kills the cows, and the car hits the cow. I was like, that looks real.
Mm-hmm. That
looked
visceral.
Really, really good. It was CGI.
It looks so
real.
And
I had to look it up. And apparently a lot of people had to look it up and they had a complaint from the Academy or something because they were like, yo, did you kill a cow for this? And they were
the,
like, no.
It was the Humane Society. They wouldn't give them a no animals were harmed rating until they proved it was CGI because it looks so good.
Yeah. And then they said
it actually wasn't. But then to get the rating, they had to make it CGI.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean,
I made that up.
And honestly, like I still have a little bit of skepticism there where I'm like, that looked like you fucking ran over a cow.
That would be the one scene my wife was in the room for. And she was like, oh.
Yeah. It was so visceral. And apparently it was fake.
But
well
because
done.
It was so, it had that impact. Half an hour later when they're like, cow killer.
Yeah.
That made me bust a gut.
You remember?
Not a nut.
Busted a gut.
A gut.
Which is, and apparently the character that guy represents
His baby face George Nelson.
Killed a cow in the Odyssey. I forget who it is.
Naturally. Gotta eat.
But that's a real guy. He just died 3 years prior to when the movie was supposed to start.
Oh, like, yeah.
George Nelson's a real dude.
Bank robber guy.
Yeah. My last hit pick. I loved the travel scenes. It's like a third of the way through the movie where they actually just show them like walking places after their car breaks down and they get separated from Tommy after the police come and bust them up. And there's like the kids walking the ice blocks and they steal the pie and leave the money and they get passed by the prisoner transport and stuff. I wish there was more of those kind of breaks in between some of this high speed stuff because it's just nice to see them like traveling, being together, forming that bond. It kind of started to make more sense to why they were so close when it showed like how far they were traveling. Mm. It made the South look like Lord of the Rings. Like they were just walking.
It's Mordor.
And walking.
This
and
sort
walking.
Of is like
it was
a,
crazy.
There are some parallels to draw between this and Lord of the Rings here,
Odyssey.
I guess. It's a big giant adventure for sure.
I like the kids holding the, carrying the blocks of ice. Like their whole pant legs were soaked wet. It was very realistic. Mm-hmm.
We're going on a quest.
But one man holding both of those. You know, one man could do the work of those two kids.
Maybe.
Just inefficient. Get those kids working on something else. Let's move on to fan service.
Oh no. Well, I haven't.
In constant service.
All through this plane.
So last time we did that time travel movie Primer. Yes. This will not be interesting to Belle.
No.
But there are some dedicated fans who cleared up some questions we had. Mm. Namely, Carol Peters. That's a double E. Peters.
Oh. Okay.
At the end of the movie, when Aaron, remember we were discussing whether or not he's building one giant time machine or multiple time machines?
Yep.
KP here says it's definitely a big box. It's a big one. Throughout the movie, the walls of the boxes are covered in smaller cells, and he's just talking about putting one of those cells every meter. As for the purpose of the big one, these boxes can be used as duplicators. If they're larger, you can duplicate more stuff per trip. Another thing you could do is make multi-year trips, because if you had to stay in the box for a really long time, you would need more space for like long-term life support equipment.
Well, okay, so fair enough. Mm. But I also I have a counterpoint to that, pointed out by other people on one of these sites that I saw. If you have multiple boxes, you don't have to stay in one box for a really long time if you want to go back until like the very first point when you turn on the box, because you could activate a box and then a couple days later or hours later activate another box, a few hours later, days later, activate another box, and then you could travel back in time to when you set the first box, wait a little bit, travel back in time and again, you know? So it's like, you get what
like
I'm
more
saying.
Save points.
Yeah.
I like how you're telling me this. I'm like, I don't even know what you're talking about.
So either way could work. I mean, the main advantage of having one big giant box is that you can fit more stuff inside the box. But as we see, like, the boxes are very easily collapsible. So I don't know. Mm. Anyways, I like that there's room for interpretation.
You think
there.
Belle would like this movie?
Have you seen the movie Cube?
Is that a Canadian movie? That's like a one location movie, right?
It's very, it's like a horror movie.
Yeah. And
with this giant cube.
Very low budget. Like they shot it like in two different rooms.
So when you're talking about big boxes, I think of Cube. Mm. Leave a comment down below if you've watched Cube and liked the video.
I think the movie we've covered that's most like that is Platform, the Platform.
Mm.
But
where there's like a platform, right?
That's right. So when you say platform, like
I say cube,
do you like Facebook or YouTube as a platform? I think of the cube.
Hmm.
Hmm.
What?
I will say that. So I asked somebody to comment if they had any answer to the scene where Abe walks over to where Aaron should be in the box and he's not there.
Yeah, I saw some answers.
And he walks back and then walks it back again and Aaron is there. This guy, Reshirt Wookie, says, the part where Abe walks back and forth to see if Aaron is out of the box, they explain in the bit of dialogue right after it. Aaron is clearly in distress after exiting the box, and Abe says, you got out too early. You have to wait for the machine to cycle down, which means that Aaron got out too early from his perspective, but too late from the box's perspective. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it does. That's why, because Aaron's in the room and he's like, where's Abe?
Which is why Aaron comes out a few minutes after Abe does. But no, they're not. I'm not talking about them coming out of the box. They're in the box.
No, because Mr. Peters, or I actually don't know the gender of this person, in their post also said that they addressed this point. And he said the scene where Abe is alone in the box and looks at his watch, he's actually not in the box at all. He's just gotten out of the box and is now standing in the storage unit, which has two pocket boxes inside of. So you're just mistaken on that point.
What?
He's looking at his watch because he's worried Aaron is not going to come out of his own box in time, but then he suddenly comes out and all is well. So the storage unit is not the box, just contains two smaller boxes.
No, that's not true. What do you mean? Do you mean the storage
unit? I don't know. I don't have the movie in front of me right now, man.
I thought the storage unit is the box.
What? You did?
They don't go into the box inside of the storage.
Yeah, they do.
They never show them doing that. They show them lying.
Yeah, what are you talking about? Yeah, the storage unit just contains two boxes that they go and climb into. That's actually on his point. They wrote, this might have also caused the oxygen mask confusion. They don't wear them inside the storage unit, but they do wear them inside the actual boxes. Because remember, we're discussing like, hey, where's those oxygen masks? Aren't they in the storage unit without wearing them? Yeah, they are, because the boxes are in the storage unit.
What? Yeah, you didn't get this at all.
A key.
So these boxes are like TARDISes.
Is that for real?
They're bigger on the inside than the outside.
No.
No, they're just big or small boxes.
Wait. Oh, man.
I refuse to watch this movie, but I will ask questions as if I'm going to watch it.
Okay.
Oh, Roderick Cube.
I'm still not like 100% convinced that that's the case, but I'm going to look it up.
That's okay.
So then where does Dick in a Box come into this?
Pardon me?
Where does Dick in a Box come into this?
If you want a young looking dick. Okay, let's go to Now Playing. Just only put your dick in the box. It goes back in time. You're like, it's paler now? I don't know. Anyways, what have you been watching lately? Listening to, consuming media? You've been going to plays.
Many, countless, and none have any stakes or high action.
Plays?
It's a callback
that's
joke.
That's a joke. Riley. But I was like, are you actually going to plays?
You know, maybe. Do you want to go?
No.
All right. Well, I've been playing Red Dead Redemption 2.
Why?
I'm behind the times, and I want to be a cowboy. So I watched it, or I've been playing it. What a good game. Holy smokes. I cannot believe I've waited this long.
Have you heard of this game, Grand Theft Auto?
Who?
I heard it's good.
Greater Toronto area. I've also been playing Dome Keeper, which is a new game. It's like, did you ever play Motherlode, the
My
Flash
wife.
Game?
No. No.
What made you think of Borat?
Dome Keeper? I don't know. It's just like an insult. You could call somebody.
Well, I'm not going to explain it. Go play Dome Keeper. If you haven't played Red Dead, play it. But
it's
watching...
the sequel to Dick Farmer.
This guy's full of beans today. I'm watching I'm a Killer.
Beans?
Full of beans.
You're full of piss and
have
vinegar.
Have you ever seen I'm a Killer on Netflix?
No.
They interview people on death row. But the way they do it, they make it seem like this person shouldn't be on death row. And at the very end of like every episode, it twists of being like, there was very clear evidence this person's a murderer. And they like present it to the person. They're like, oh. No, you must be mistaken, but it's like every single one, it's like a gotcha. You start feeling bad for these prisoners on death row, then it's like, but when the police got there, they were covered in blood and said, I killed this person, and they had a gun, and they're the only person in the room. And it's just like every single time, I'm just, I love true crime.
Way to bring it home.
That's so funny. We just talked about last week about how David thinks true crime is immoral and shouldn't exist in the world.
What?
Yeah.
Why is it supposed to inspire me to do crime? What is his logic on that?
I sort of agreed with him, and I don't agree that true crime as a genre should not exist and it can't exist. But I think that I also think that in general, more true crime content is not good for society.
Yeah, because if there was less, there'd be less crimes.
No, I think the main thing is that it desensitizes us to the horribleness of what's happening to these victims.
We know your views, Riley. You told us last week.
Right, we talked about it last week. But there is a comment from last video about it that I was going to read, but now it's pretty long.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's funny. That's ironic that you were so...
I thought you did that on purpose because it was so good.
No, I love Derek's movies, and I've watched the episode, but I must have missed that spot.
Do you think
well,
about
right
the...
at the end. You just get out of here right
Do you think
then,
about
right?
the moral ramifications of what you do, Jake?
Honestly, constantly. Even right now. It's why I'm a man of constant sorrow.
Red Dead, you're just playing as the bad guy.
I just think
I play
like
as a good guy.
Humans as animals like go through the world trying to like get information so that they can act appropriately in future scenarios, right?
Now I know what to do if someone tries to pull me into their van, I guess. Like, I don't know.
Exactly. So it's just like the pinnacle, like these stories of like one-off events that like could happen. Oh my God.
Yeah, it makes me appreciate life more, you know?
Oh, it's definitely fascinating, and there's obviously a reason why it's attractive, but is it good?
Right, that's
People
why I
want to get wasted and drunk and ruin their life.
You so
Speaking
much.
Of GTA, wasted.
Greater Toronto area.
Yeah, get drunk there. It's fun.
What are you playing, James? Or reading or watching?
Caught up on Rings of Power, I think. Unless, I don't know. I was watching some episodes during the day yesterday. A lot of nighttime.
It's still coming out.
A lot of nighttime scenes with the sun blaring on my OLED. I couldn't really see what was going on, but I think the good guys win. I think. I don't know.
Is it a good show?
Yeah. Still watching it.
Wait, which show are we talking about?
ROP.
Ah. Yeah. I saw a lot of people really praising the last episode. You're caught up now?
I believe so. I don't know if I saw the whole last episode. But.
Okay. A lot of people praising the episode. Very exciting. And it was exciting. A lot of stuff happened. But I think I was like, it's even, there was one scene that in particular with Galadriel and
Icarus.
Adar.
Oh, spoilers then. I don't think I got to right to the end there.
Okay,
I got
spoilers of Rings of Power, obviously.
Well, the spoilers are for the last 10 minutes that I haven't seen.
Yeah.
Because I know that I was watching when the Numenoreans like got there.
Oh, and then you didn't really watch after that?
I don't know if I saw
that. This happens after that. You missed one of the best parts in the episode.
Dang, I'll have to put that on.
Classic.
But the rest of, yeah, I feel like the show, we've said it before, it's fine. I'm going to keep watching it. It just seems like a generic fantasy to me now instead of a Lord of the Rings show. No,
I'm not going to watch it then. Can't make me.
It's funny. At the beginning, they really like blow you away with how much they're like being like, this is like Lord of the Rings. We got the grand vistas and the music and the amazing CGI and the set design and like blah, blah, blah. And now at this point, it's starting to feel like Wheel of Time a little bit. It's starting to feel like...
I don't know. I thought it was pretty Helm's Deep.
Liked Wheel of Time.
It was pretty Helm's Deep, but spoilers. No, you haven't watched the last 10 minutes. I have to spoil it for you.
Don't spoil it.
Fine, I'll take my headphones off.
I don't watch it either.
I can't hear you.
What are you going to spoil it for? These people haven't watched it either if it just came out.
That's so annoying that you watched most of the episode, but not the end.
That is very weird.
I'm sorry, I have children.
10 minutes?
And when did you watch this? Like this morning? You haven't found another 10 minutes?
It was like yesterday. No, I'm very busy.
Anyways.
You know how busy I am? 2 hours a day driving, guys.
The last 10 minutes kind of ruined the rest of the episode.
Okay.
For me.
More like Numa snore. No?
Yeah. Okay. I don't know. Yep.
Andor? Either of you watching Andor?
Andor's... My friend is watching it, and I believe him. He said it was quite good.
I can't believe that everybody watched all the bad Disney shows, and now that there's actually a good one, everyone was so burned out on the shitty ones that they're like, I don't need
to watch. That's me. I'm exhausted.
And they're like, is it good? I don't know. Book of Boba Fett was pretty bad. And I'm like, it's a completely different show. It's actually made by people who know how to make films and stuff. Like, Tony Gilroy actually knows what he's doing here.
So it's good?
It is good. It's a good show.
Or is it just good compared to this drivel?
I would say it is a good show. It's not blowing me out of the water yet. But just to see a Star Wars property being handled by someone who seems like they know what they're doing is very reassuring.
Is it a good Star Wars show or is it a good space fantasy show?
I heard it has good writing.
It has good writing. It has good acting. It has good cinematography, color grading, editing.
How about battles? Does it have good battles?
There's one
not
battle.
Not enough lightsabers.
It's one. Not all about the battles.
Is there a lightsaber in it?
Not yet. I don't know if there ever will be.
See,
it's not about Jedi. That's what's so great about it. It's not about Jedi. There's no stormtroopers. There's no bounty hunters.
It's not Star Wars.
Yeah, why do they even call it Star Wars?
It's in the Star Wars universe. Yeah, you watch it, you're like, this is Star Wars. But it doesn't have... It's not relying...
It doesn't have anything from Star Wars.
It's not relying on the member berries. It's not relying on...
So where's Luke Skywalker?
At this point, he is on Tatooine, chilling.
Oh, where does... Yeah, when does this take place?
Moisture farming.
After the...
He's moisture farming on his Xbox.
That's crazy. So it's a
Tatooine.
Prequel.
It's a prequel to Rogue One, which is a prequel to A New Hope.
Which one's A New Hope? Four?
Episode four.
I didn't like the OG three.
I miss David. He knows Star Wars.
The original three Star Wars suck. That's a whole other conversation.
Nice. Perfect place to wrap it up. You can tweet at us at TJMPod. You can email us, but Bell won't answer.
I will.
Hello at theyrejustmovies.com. You can call Bell at home, 604-778. I just made those numbers up.
You did. That I mean, you were correct.
6969.
Call
Bam.
Me.
His number is 604-420-6969.
420.
Please call me.
It's a 1-900 number, actually.
1-900.
He just answers with that voice. It's like
1337. That's a different one.
That's for nerds. That's
All
a nerd
right.
number.
End it. End this.
Goodbye.
Bye.
That's how we do it. Oh, next week. I don't know. Look in the description.
Yep. Sorry.